Up North News with Pat Kreitlow is a product of Courier Newsroom and has a joint sales agreement with Civic Media. Enjoy.
Real information, good conversation, unabashedly Wisconsin. Up North News with Pat Kreitlow starts now.
Well, here we are, and good morning. It's Monday, August 22nd, week number 4 of our coffee breaks together. I'm Pat Kreitlow here. Luke Mathers is over there. And Luke, we're going to start. I love Dan Schaefer's word, discombobulated or recombobulated. We're going to start there. First off, because I didn't see my usual Facebook advisory. Are we on live on the face page with those three lucky people?
We are about to be.
Okay. All right. So I want to give them the proper greeting that they deserve. If you're listening on the radio in the Wausau area, I mean, you're going to be with us. We're so thankful. The folks, the folks joining us by social media certainly deserve a nice greeting too, because they could be in, Mumbai for all I know.
They could
I
be don't anywhere.
Know
who monitors. Yeah.
Go. Could be anywhere. So anyway, it's nice to have you here. I was going to start with a little bit about the weather because we are coming out of the weekend. We want to know how things are looking for the next couple of days. And while I can look at the National Weather Service pages from, locations all around the state of Wisconsin and tell you roughly it's going to be fairly nice Monday, Tuesday, maybe a chance for rain Wednesday from west to east into Thursday, the fact of the matter is there's no great place, app or website, to just get the couple of things an old guy like me wants. I don't need a lot of prattling on. I don't need a lot of satellite injury. I just need the radar and a surface map. And again, maybe it's a function of age. When we all grew up, not only did you have, the TV weathercaster, they actually had little pointers and they would point at the map occasionally. And on that map was a series of H's and L's and lines with triangles and lines with, semicircles. And that's what I guess is called a surface map. So you could see if cold air were coming towards you, a storm front, or if there was a big high pressure system, you knew weather was going to be nice. And for the life of me, and this has been going on for a long, long time with me, you can't just find an easy surface map that says, here's what it looks like today, here's what it looks like tomorrow, as far as what's going on right now, here's the radar. They're finally getting better at just letting you see a radar. Again, I don't want to listen to you talk endlessly about what you think. If I can see the radar, I know if there's rain here. If I can see a surface map, I know if there's cold or warm air coming here. And instead, we get lots of, those weather spotter readings or weather net or whatever it is. And I think they're going for that folksy, homespun shtick, but whether, Edna and Ralph on the farm in Tilden, have a different temperature than the Eau Claire Airport 10 miles away, matters less to me. I don't need 70 different spotters on a map within a 70-mile radius. I'd like to know if that front, 100 or 200 miles away is going to mean I have to close all the windows later on today. So for all those weather websites and app developers listening, and I'm sure there must be at least one of you out there, just give me a surface map and let me have the radar and I can take it from there. But from what I can gather, it looks like today and tomorrow, pretty nice. Wednesday into Thursday, not quite as nice. And then, we are in the last full week of August already. It's not the week heading into Labor Day yet. That's the following week. But heading into the last week of August just seems a little off. My wife told me as we were driving this weekend to some plans I'll tell you about later, she says, "Oh, looks like some of the leaves are starting to change colors." I did not mean to wheel on her the way that I did, but I turned and just said something along. I would never say shut up, but the tone of my voice was just like, shut up. No, no, no. You're seeing things. It's an illusion. Okay. It's not what you think it is. So then I think she sensed that, because she was like, although that could be stress from the drought we were having, you know, because we went a long time without rain prior to last week.
Yeah. Everywhere that I see, I was a little upset about the rain over the weekend, but every report you read of national like weather or international weather, even like Europe and around the world, everybody else is really needing some rain. So it's almost like I wasn't that upset after hearing those reports this morning.
No, we are doing fine here by comparison to places that are having horrific flooding, horrific drought, or then drought followed by flooding because the ground isn't prepared to take that much rain. I mean, I'm sure you've heard the line when it comes to anything involving extreme weather and, you know, the environment, take Mother Nature and lay the points, because nature's always going to find its way back to encroach. And, you know, if you get rid of, I don't know, things like whether it's the ozone layer or just warm everything up, nature has a way of saying, I got this. You won't like the results, but I think that if we would like a more hospitable place to live, or more importantly, one to give our kids and our grandkids, we could maybe stop doing the things that led to the problems that we're going to enjoy probably for the rest of our natural lifetimes. But that's not to say that it is, you know, inevitable. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to get into more of a review of this weekend's events, including a brand new commercial. Sure makes Mandela Barnes look bad, till you realize it's not an ad paid for by Ron Johnson. Well, in a way it is, but it's an ad paid for by billionaires who have a reason to support Ron Johnson. That's coming up next. You're up north. Monday morning. Good morning. I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is Up North News. Obviously, one of the big stories that is, well, we have a pair of biggest stories in Wisconsin during the 2022 campaigns, the governor's race and then a U.S. Senate race. And of course, a close third would be the third congressional district out in western and parts of central Wisconsin. So I always bristle at the notion of calling these midterms. They're called midterms because we're in the middle of a president's term, but we elect our governor during those midterm years. So the non-presidential election years are very big here in Wisconsin, not to mention for all of the usual reasons about, you know, legislative seats. All of the state assembly is up every 2 years. About half of the Wisconsin State Senate is up every 2 years because they have four-year terms. So midterms have always mattered a lot here anyway, but perhaps no more so than now, not just because of Governor Tony Evers running for re-election, and if he loses and that veto pen isn't there anymore, you know, heaven help us with what, you know, the Republican agenda might be in Wisconsin for things like, you know, democracy, women's reproductive health rights, public education, the environment, you name it. But it's also important because of that U.S. Senate race. If we've learned nothing over the past couple of years, it's that Democrats having a majority of 50 senators plus the vice president is not a true majority if you have a couple of extremely squishy Democratic senators, and if you have a Republican side that no longer embraces bipartisanship. I mean, just flat out will do things like vote against capping insulin costs just to avoid giving Democrats a victory, even though they still claim they support capping prices for insulin. Again, they could have voted for an amendment saying that in the latest bill, the Inflation Reduction Act, and then still voted against the bill if they didn't like the bill. But to actually go on record voting against the amendment as well means you can't take them seriously when they say they're going to do things like fight on your behalf. And that's very much at play in this Senate election in Wisconsin involving Ron Johnson, the multimillionaire who is running for a third term, despite his promises not to run for a third term. If you reelect me, in 2016, now that will be it. I will term limit myself. And well, that promise has gone by the wayside, along with so much more. You know, any semblance of, you know, bipartisanship is out the window, to the point where not only did he have a role that was expected to play on January 6th in transmitting fraudulent electoral ballots to Vice President Mike Pence, but he now goes on to say, as he did this weekend, that you know, any role he played in the insurrection was really very small, and therefore it just reminds me of that line again from Arrested Development: I may have committed some light treason. But he says it was so light, a couple of seconds, he said, to Upfront. And yeah, Luke, he literally a couple of seconds.
I have the clip from him and reporter Matt Smith, if you want to share.
I was just going to say, he was talking to WISN's Matt Smith. Let's listen in.
First of all, my election's about, you know, me running for as a U.S. senator, dealing with the issues that are impacting Wisconsin.
Can you remove Trump from that?
I don't personally think Trump should have any impact whatsoever on this election in the, you know, November 2022. Now, what he does in the future, that's something, a decision he's going to make.
And then we got more here too. Let me find
the clip. Go ahead.
Sure.
One
moment. I thought it was all together, so Matt's letting me down a little bit here because I thought it was all one. Sorry about that.
No, that's
but,
okay.
But he has an interesting little follow-up with his role and what he did in the insurrection on January 6th. Pretty much just saying, like you said, it's a few seconds.
No big deal. You know?
No big deal. A few seconds worth. So let me find this whole clip.
Well, you look, give me an okay when you got it there. But, you know, he, again, remember of Ron Johnson, who said shortly afterward, having that violent band, that mob in Washington didn't make him nervous. Whereas if it had been a Black Lives Matter demonstration, he said he would have been nervous, which, again, pretty much says it all. But since he insists on saying more, here's what else Ron Johnson had to say.
The electors were not delivered because we found out from Vice President's staff they didn't want them delivered. End of story. There again, I know that's been blown out of proportion.
You think so?
The January 6th committee didn't do their due diligence, and they blew this into like some, you know, massive conspiracy. Again, I had like virtually no involvement. Literally, my involvement lasted seconds. Okay.
If the Vice President's chief of staff wanted to say don't deliver these, would you have brought that document to the Vice President?
In what way could have I? Again, you know, we did our due diligence. So if somebody handed us something, we're supposed to deliver to the Vice President. Does he want it? Nope. Okay. End of story. That was it.
No, it's really not.
He doesn't really answer the question. He doesn't answer the question at all, Pat.
No. Not only does he not answer the question, because he knows he would then have to explain his support for the insurrection, but he says, in the end, those electors, again, the fake electoral votes, were not delivered because we found out from the Vice President's staff that they didn't want them delivered. In no way is he disavowing what was done, what was on those sheets of paper, fraudulently signed by fake electors, a scheme that was concocted by Trump well before the election. We have documented the ways that this has been done. The January 6th committee has done a masterful job. When Senator Johnson says they haven't done their due diligence, what he is saying is that there has been no opportunity to cross-examine. There has been no opportunity for right-wing Republicans to present their case. Please remember, this was by their own doing. They were invited to be part of the January 6th committee to show that they gave a damn about finding out what exactly or who exactly was behind an insurrection that has left a trail of blood and death in its wake and some real serious public doubts about democracy on the part of those who have continually heard nothing but doubts expressed based on the lies that Donald Trump wants to spread. This conspiracy has been well documented. Republicans could have been on the committee, could have cross-examined. They said, no, we don't care. And that way, if we're not on it, we can criticize it and say, well, it's not real because we're not on it. You know, it just doesn't work that way anymore. And so to get back to the midterms, this is not a typical midterm cycle. In it, what has normally happened in our past history is, you know, when there have been Democratic presidents, there have been Republicans in Congress who oppose anything and everything, by and large, the bipartisan infrastructure bill, one notable exception, but by and large, everything else, you obstruct it. You then say, wow, this Democratic president couldn't get things done. Republican voters hear the message and say, yeah, they couldn't get things done, and end up putting the Republicans, the people doing the obstructing, back in power. That's how midterm cycles have typically worked. This is no typical midterm cycle because it's not just your standard obstruction. There's this guy, a former president, twice impeached, disgraced former president, actively still what we would call criming. And as a result, we have people who see that and think it's not a real good idea to take top secret documents, you know, to your unsecured Florida golf course where, you know, anything could happen to them and everything else that Trump has been a part of. And the obstruction included right-wing Supreme Court justices actually going there and repealing the abortion protections in Roe versus Wade. So this goes beyond obstruction. It now goes to just the actual implementation of something so anathema to American values, because American values overwhelmingly support a woman's right to choose, at least in cases of rape and incest, if not more, that it just goes to show how this current batch of Republicans in power is out of the mainstream. So you have to say things and make campaign commercials that lay claims that are dubious at best, and upon further examination, are downright disingenuous. Now, this is an ad. Some of you are following along and already know who's behind the ad, but for those of you who don't, this is an ad coming up here against Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes, who's challenging Ron Johnson. And it seems like a pretty, you know, typical campaign commercial. Let's listen to its message.
I'm Mandela Barnes. People like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Rashida Tlaib, Ilhan Omar, they're bringing big, bold ideas to Capitol Hill.
Radical ideas funded by the taxpayers.
Free public higher education. We need an immigration system that says that no human being is illegal. We can start by making sure that immigrants have access to driver's licenses and in-state college tuition.
And guess who's going to pay for all that? Wisconsin Truth Pack is responsible for the content of this advertising.
There it is, Wisconsin Truth Pack. So again, you don't hear, I'm Ron Johnson and I support this message. So that means he did not pay for it. It's not directly from the campaign. It is instead a super PAC. And a super PAC means it's a group that can receive basically unlimited corporate donations. This because of the Citizens United decision. So when we talk about basically corporate money is everywhere in politics these days, it doesn't mean that they're giving directly to the candidate, you know, so ostensibly there's still that firewall there, but it's a firewall that doesn't really exist, because when you can put unlimited money into a super PAC and they can run unlimited commercials, you know, that means a lot more. There's this discussion that money equals free speech, and that's really the faulty underpinning of everything in democracy in the United States these days. But money can't equal speech, and we can't all enjoy the same level of freedom of speech if, say, a billionaire can put millions and millions of dollars into commercials that you and I cannot afford. Well, billionaires are exactly who are behind Wisconsin Truth Super PAC. It was something that was set up by the U-Lines. It was something that's set up by Diane Hendricks of ABC Supply. These are billionaires who directly benefited from a massive sweetheart tax deal that Ron Johnson pushed through on their behalf in the 2017 tax bill. They have been, they were vocal supporters of Johnson previously. They had already given, it's believed, millions of dollars in past campaigns and over the years. But it was only in this cycle that you have them forming a super PAC that can then take in virtually unlimited corporate cash and put it back out in ads that are supposed to scare you. Did you notice that echo that came into the audio when they talked about immigrants and they talked about education being free and who pays for that? I'm not hearing anything wrong with that ad. We do need immigration reform. We do need education that is affordable in this country. But if you make it sound scary with a bunch of scary non-white people, then perhaps these billionaires are going to have more impact than you'd like in what are called the midterm elections. We'll take a break and have more after this here up north.
Follow Up North News with our daily newsletter. Go to our website, upnorthnewswi.com, and click newsletter on the top banner. Once again, here's Pat Kreitlow.
Welcome back. Monday morning, last full week of August. Pat Kreitlow here, along with Luke Mathers. And by the way, you're saying, shouldn't he be talking to somebody by now? And we did have a guest booked for this morning, but unfortunately some travel plans came up. And I'll tell you, that's one thing I would not be doing right now is air travel. The air travel is just insane. And I normally don't have anything against air travel. I know that, you know, they're trying their best. I'd never take it out on the people who are on the ground, even though sir, a lot of other people seem not to have that problem. But this is not their problem. This is made at executive levels to the way that they've either overbooked or understaffed or just haven't made the right changes on their schedules. And instead, we're finding so many delayed flights or canceled flights to the point where there's travels that we would like to do. We have daughters in two different parts of the country, but we still haven't made those plans yet because we're just not sure air travel is going to be the way to go for a little while. And we'd really like to get back to that because we do like to go there. We got nothing against driving though. We've driven 18 hours to Idaho several times and we'll do it again if we have to. It's by and large a lovely drive, but if it's not lovely that day because of the weather, you know it, believe me. We were talking before the break about Senator Ron Johnson and a super PAC formed by billionaires that is running ads against him. And I believe they're the ones, I have to double check this, but there's another new ad running against Mandela Barnes saying in essence that he hasn't paid his taxes when he has, but there was a year where he didn't file at all because he made so little money and has paid very little in taxes compared to multimillionaires. But there have also been times where Mandela Barnes has paid more in taxes than Ron Johnson and some other millionaires because of the tax breaks and the loopholes that they've created in the code over the years. The one that we've talked about most often here and we'll continue to talk about here, the one that led to the creation of that Wisconsin Truth Super PAC, is one that Ron Johnson single-handedly got put into the 2017 Republican tax cut bill. It's the one that enables Johnson and other Republicans to say with a grain of truth that they have lowered taxes for small businesses, but the actual benefit to what you would consider small businesses is a sliver of what has gone to the wealthiest taxpayers. And I want to read a bit from ProPublica's groundbreaking article that first demonstrated how big that Ron Johnson sweetheart tax deal was. The article is called Secret IRS Files Reveal How Much the Ultra Wealthy Gained by Shaping Trump's Big Beautiful Tax Cut. And it's a lengthy article, well worth your time to read. And it gets into more than just the Wisconsin billionaires, but plenty of other people whose fingerprints were on the 2017 tax bill and who ultimately benefited. And of course, it wasn't you, by and large. So the relevant parts here start with something that Johnson did for the tax break for what are called pass-through corporations. And you probably know there are different ways to classify a business. Some you know, sell stock, some are privately held. There are pass-through entities. There are a lot of small businesses that are pass-through entities where they don't pay corporate taxes because it's counted on the individual business owner's tax return. And so they pay the taxes as an individual. So the tax liability passes through the company to them. Sounds like a great thing for a small business, right? But there's no limit on what constitutes a pass-through company. There are some very massive companies out there that are pass-through entities, or small companies with very wealthy taxpayers who are pass-through entities. Now, there already was a tax break for pass-through entities. The ProPublica column reads, Johnson's intervention in November 2017 was designed to boost the bill's already generous tax break for pass-through companies. The bill had allowed for business owners to deduct up to 17.4% of their profits. Thanks to Johnson holding out, that figure was ultimately boosted to 20 cents. That might seem like a small increase, but even a few extra percentage points can translate into tens of millions of dollars in extra deductions in 1 year alone if you're an ultra-wealthy family. The mechanics are complicated, the article says, but for the rich, it generally means that a business owner gets to keep an extra 7 cents on every dollar of profit. And to understand the windfall, they write, take the case of the Uline family. There's Dick and his wife, Liz, who own the packaging giant Uline. The logo of the Pleasant Prairie firm is stamped on the bottom of countless paper bags. Uline produced nearly $1 billion in profits in 2018, according to ProPublica's analysis of tax records. Dick and Liz Uline, who own a majority of the company, reported more than $700 million in income that year. I'm going to say that again. The company made about $1 billion in profits, and they had income in 2018 of more than $700 million. But they were able to slash what they owed the IRS, and to you and me for our schools, roads, environment, and so forth. They were able to slash what they owed the IRS with a $118 million deduction generated by the new tax break. So by Johnson holding out as he did and insisting on this break for pass-through entities, which by and large deal with small, which should deal with small businesses, the lion's share of it went to the ultra wealthy so that they could slash their tax liability by $118 million. Liz Uline, who serves as company president, has criticized high taxes in her company newsletter, the ProPublica article goes on to say. The year before the tax overhaul, the couple gave generously to support Trump's 2016 presidential campaign. That same year, when Johnson was facing long odds in his reelection bid against Russ Feingold, the Ulines gave more than $8 million to a series of political committees that blanketed the state with pro-Johnson and anti-Feingold ads. That blitz led the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel to dub the Ulines the Koch brothers of Wisconsin politics. Johnson's campaign also got a boost from Diane Hendricks, Wisconsin's richest woman and owner of the roofing wholesaler ABC Supply. The Beloit-based billionaire has publicly pushed for tax breaks and said she wants to stop the U.S. from becoming, quote, a socialist ideological nation. Hendricks has said Johnson won her over after she grilled him at a brunch meeting 6 years earlier. She gave about $12 million. To a pair of political committees, the Reform America Fund and the Freedom Partners Action Fund, that bought ads attacking Feingold. So what was the result? In the first year of the pass-through tax break, Hendricks got a $97 million deduction on income of $500 million. By reducing the amount of income that she owed taxes on, that deduction saved her $36 million. She saved $36 million off her tax bill directly because of the actions of Ron Johnson. So is spending a little of that, hundreds of thousands, maybe a couple of million, pouring that back into politics through a super PAC and other groups and other ads, is it worth it? Sure looks like it. Sure looks like a massive payoff for treatment in the tax code that, as economists looked at this deduction afterwards, has overwhelmingly, well over 50% of the total dollars no longer available for roads, schools, national defense, natural disasters. A lot of that money is now still in the bank accounts of billionaires and others in the top 1% generated of income in Wisconsin. So this is the what ProPublica did. This was just about 2 years now, I think, the article is, that pointed that out. Since that time, Ron Johnson's been asked about it, and he has said that, yes, he backs it, he supports it. He again made the claim that small businesses benefit, and he confirmed that he himself has personally benefited, because the company that he ran and has since sold, since that deduction went through, was a pass-through entity. And so he generated wealth as well. His wealth has, his personal wealth has basically doubled since he's been in office. And he has said that that is, he has defended that, saying it actually should have been more, but that he has a lot of his funds, a lot of his wealth is in, I forget if it's index funds or trust funds, and he could have made more if he could have invested it, if he could have invested it in more things, which, by the way, raises a whole separate notion of whether members of Congress should be allowed to buy and sell stock. I, to this day, am flabbergasted by the now Democratic leadership of Congress, but before that, the Republican leadership of Congress, that this is allowed at all. At all. Because let's stop with the fairy tale that, you know, this is some kind of a Norman Rockwell thing of, you know, just investing in a company because you think the company is good and you like the widgets that they made. That is not what we have now. And, you know, the stories run rampant of members of Congress who some have been caught or highly suspected of trading on insider information that they received as members of Congress. Others haven't faced any consequences, but it sure stinks to high heaven. And yet we allow that. And that is how we ended up with a Congress that is filled with multimillionaires, and why you see somebody like Mandela Barnes posing such a threat that they're going to pick on whether he paid a pittance in taxes compared to, as I've now explained to you, the tens of millions of dollars in taxes that they didn't pay. It's quite a setup. And Luke, I still can't get over that they can buy and sell stocks as members of Congress. I have filled out those ethics disclosures as a member of the legislature. And I don't even know that I could face constituents knowing that.
Yeah, and the upsetting part was sometimes they use information that's not, like, even more upsetting, is that they use information that you and I aren't privy to. Like, there was a huge investment in telecommunications right before the COVID-19 pandemic, like before the shutdown happened, mid-March of 2020. There were senators, Kelly Loeffler of Georgia is the first one that comes to mind. That she just started investing in telemedicine and telecommunications heavily. And I believe her husband has Wisconsin ties. I think he's a Badger, and he oversees some kind of role at the New York Stock Exchange. And between them being briefed that COVID was a bigger thing, but them downplaying it and acting like, as Republicans were downplaying it, saying, oh, it's not that big of a deal. It's not like Trump's going to get it handled by Easter. And then they go and invest in these things and make millions off of information that you and I aren't privy to, Pat. It's extremely frustrating.
And there are plenty of people who say, well, you know, the tax code is so complex and the stock markets are so complex with, you know, derivatives and all kinds of other things, that they throw up their hands and think, well, let's just let anything go and, you know, let's just have more transparency about it. And I reject that notion, because it's not like you can't have safeguards. It's not like you can't have rules. You just need to make sure that, you know, whoever is enforcing those rules keeps up on things, doesn't have their budgets undercut by the very legislators they're supposed to be looking at. Because we end up having a situation like I found here, the Dan Bice column from just about a year ago, where Ron Johnson was discovered to have only paid a couple of $1,000s in state income tax a couple of years back. To be exact, He paid a total of $2,105 in state income taxes for 2017. That's not what you would expect from, you know, your typical multimillionaire. And he says that it has something to do with, you know, his income and the way that it was derived, but he hadn't provided the paperwork to say so. And it's that lack of transparency that, again, like I said about Trump in 2016, if they won't respect you enough to be transparent with their finances, why are you trusting them with what you're going to pay in taxes? We'll take a break, wrap up this hour right after this. You're up north.
From Lake Wissota, once again, here's Pat Kreitlow.
I don't know what your plans involved this weekend. Hope they were good. Ours actually involved a little bit of a road trip and doing some things that you don't typically do. Well, I shouldn't say that. I think a lot of people were probably back to school shopping this weekend. We weren't, having been empty nesters for many, many years now, and forgot about that till we did a little shopping ourselves. And I found myself in line. I know in one Old Navy store, I was in a line and there was one single dad there. I shouldn't say single dad. I just a dad there. I don't know his status, but it was just him and a couple of little girls. And I mean, an armful of clothes. I mean, it just had back to school written all over it. And the line was growing longer and longer, but I had, you know, no ill will toward him. Cause I remember so well when we were doing back to school shopping, which for us in a pretty low income household involved just one thing for sure, along with a couple of shirts, you know, to account for, you know, you growing over the years. But there was always that pair of tough skin jeans, Sears tough skin jeans. And those things were made out of titanium, I'm convinced, because they were so stiff. It took forever to break those in. And keep in mind, these are kids. You know, we're active. We're running all over. But for the first however long, I mean, we're running around chafing to beat the band because of, you know, whatever PFAS and other industrial chemicals made up tough skin jeans back in the day. But we got through it all. And then we hit an outlet mall. An outlet mall has anything you could possibly want, as long as your sizes are small, medium, extra small, and 4X. If you're a normal human being, say you need a large or an XL in whatever you want, or if you have a normal sized foot of a human being, which for a guy might be a 9 or a 10 or 11, an outlet mall is going to give you some great deals if, in the chase for them, you are willing to suppress the notion to throw across the room the many boxes of size 5 shoes and size 15 shoes that are in the store while you look for that one thing that's in your size. I'm starting to feel like the outlet malls need to, there should be specialized outlet malls that just, I'm going to open up one that says the size 10 men's XL outlet mall. And that's all you're going to find. And if there's not that much in the stores, fine, but at least you know what's in there and that you won't need a shovel to go through the racks of clothing. And why a shovel? Because people are animals. They don't put things away after they look at them on the rack. They just drape them over. At first I want to be mad at the workers, but then you see people, you know, the way that they treat clothes, and it's no wonder an outlet mall trip, Luke, is always an adventure.
Yeah, I'm well seasoned and well trained in the scouting of an outlet mall. I know that you also, Pat, have to consider that the sizes sometimes aren't actually what they are.
Oh, I hadn't even gotten to that part yet.
So that was the thing is you just gotta do it by looks and feels almost rather than looking at the label, because you gotta hold it up, you gotta see what it is, and you gotta just try everything on.
Never works in your favor. At no point are you gonna wear something and go, oh, that fits, and the tag says medium. No. What happens is you get something, your wife's folding it in the laundry for the first time and wonders, why has he got a 2X in this? And you put it on and it fits the exact same as an XL, but they've determined that you need to be shamed into thinking that Omar the Tent Maker created this particular shirt for you.
The reason that shirt that fit perfectly for you then, that's just mislabeled, is at the outlet mall is because it was mislabeled, not because you're magically a 2X in some shirts pad. It's you're getting the benefit of the manufacturers and the producers of that shirt to... They mislabeled it, so the other places don't want it. And then it's a treasure found at an outlet mall. And I'm one of four siblings, so between my parents, they would take us to the outlet malls all the time for that. And you just get to be good at scouting what kind of looks your size. And you just ignore the labels. You try it on. If it fits, great. And that's why growing up, I had an assortment of shirts from that were either extra small or extra large and everything in between, just because you go to the outlet mall for back to school.
Because apparently measuring things is a lost art on some folks. So we did the outlet mall. We did some traditional shopping. And then we did something that was at what I thought was going to be a museum in Minneapolis, where we went because my wife and some friends wanted to see something called the Immersive Van Gogh exhibit. And I think this has been around the country, and it happened to be in the Twin Cities when we were, you know, planning kind of an end of summer shopping trip. And so we got tickets for this. I knew nothing of it, and I decided not to learn anything about it until I got there. Sometimes you want to do, you know, a little prep work and see what's going on. Sometimes you just want to be surprised and see, you know, how does this go? And I decided to be, you know, a risk taker this time around. And I'm not trashing it by any stretch of the imagination. It was just different, is all. Now I'm not the art connoisseur of the family. I don't know the difference between a Manet and a Monet, or Moni Moni from Billy Idol. You know, there's just different things that are out there. So I would know something when I saw it, that's a familiar painting, but I couldn't pick a Van Gogh out of a lineup. But you get there, and I thought it was, I didn't know what they meant by immersive. Well, what they give you, that I'm holding up for Luke's benefit here, is a cushion. They give you basically, it's just a sponge, you know, with a cover around it, with a lovely Van Gogh sunflower on there. And then they say, now you can head into the gallery. You go there, and it's not a museum. It's how should I put this? It's a warehouse is all it is. And it's about 100 feet long. It's about 60 feet wide. And there are apparently slide projectors all around, or some kind of projectors all around, and just a concrete floor. And that's what the cushion's for. It's not some nice thing like, here, take this to a ball game with you.
It's for your benefit.
It's for your benefit, because this is a 30-minute film, basically, where you're going to sit on this concrete floor, and all around you are going to be projected Van Gogh pieces of art, sketches and whatnot. And it's very well done. I mean, they deconstruct the paintings and put like little individual brush strokes and then create the painting, or they bring in just elements. You know, it starts as a sky that takes up the entire warehouse, you know, and then up come the buildings and then up come the people, set to wonderful music. It's all very fine and good. But I was expecting just a bit more from an immersive exhibit. I think my daughters figured out what it is I wanted when they asked, did they throw paint at you? That's what I would have done. If it were me, an immersive Van Gogh, you're going to get splattered with paint along the way and really feel like you're part of it.
Better than getting your ear cut off.
Well, yeah, when you think, why didn't I think of that? Yes, no razors, just cushions. Probably the better way to go. We'll be back after this. You're up north.